Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Okay. We were talking about Sur La Table earlier in the show.
Yeah.
And Seth said that you'd prefer to pronounce it the more Americanized Sur La Table. Text message. I'm still laughing about Sur La Table. Reminds me of the now defunct sandwich shop Au Bon Pain.
Au Bon Pain.
Au Bon Pain.
There used to be that was in airports for a long time. It survived. It seemed like it survived in airports longer than it did in cities. So every now and then I would go to Au Bon Pain at an airport and enjoy myself and imagine myself an annoying Frenchman.
I got to get me a sandwich at the Au Bon Pain, all right? Let's get it.
You know, Sean, every now and then people accuse you of being an elitist. I don't think saying Sur La Table is helping at all.
No. That's how it's supposed to be pronounced. Oh, because I'm respecting a business by pronouncing it the right way?
One of my favorite moments in Houston when I was standing in line behind a guy at a coffee shop right on Richmond. And he was like, he looked like he had just rolled in from West Texas, had the accent and everything. And he ordered like, yeah, I'll get just a couple medium coffees and can I get 3 croissants? I wanted to interview him because it didn't look like he was putting on airs or anything. He probably just like took French in high school or something and it was just in him, but he pronounced it with like perfect French pronunciation.
You had -1,000 on croissant for sure.
Yeah. You said croissant, you know? I thought he was like, yeah, I'll give him a croissant.
He was like croissant.
And I sat and I analyzed it for far too long. I was kind of eavesdropping on his conversation later. He wasn't like a funny dude that was saying it ironically or anything. It was just good. That was the way he says croissant.
That's funny. CJ Stroud did an interview on the boardroom is what this outlet is called. And there's an article that you can go find that's really good. Yeah. And there's about a 7-minute video that's really, really good as well.
I believe these guys are Houston based. He did a good interview with them last year as
So this is good. So he's a year in and there's a lot of talk in there about his upbringing. And there's a lot of stuff that if you're a big CJ Stroud fan, you probably know already, but it's always fun to listen to CJ talk about it. So I pulled a few of the things that we haven't heard from CJ before. And I hadn't heard this before. It sounds like you had, Seth, but I had not heard this before, and CJ lay this out. The impact that a huge contract extension for a former Houston athlete, we have this athlete to thank for the hyper-focused version of CJ Stroud that now wears a Houston Texans uniform.
A memory that is core in my heart, you know. I remember going to school one morning, you know, and I didn't really have the best living situation growing up, you know, so... But I knew I was always talented at sports. And I remember I seen James Harden's contract and they broke it down by the year, the month, the day, and the second. And I was like, man, they paying this dude all this money to play a sport we grew up loving. From that moment on, my life changed. And I stopped going to lunch. I stopped hanging out. I stopped going to parties. I stopped doing a lot of things. I started just grinding and working because I wanted to change my family dynamic and my last name. I wanted to mean something. That's when that started.
That worked.
Yeah. it worked. Yeah, it totally worked. You know, it's funny with CJ. I think sometimes, I think some football coaches in pro football especially are a little guilty of this. There's times where, you know, on average, the kids that have a really solid foundation at home tend to thrive more in the NFL and they tend to be more dependable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think some coaches that, you know, don't understand statistics or life sometimes, they start being married to that a little too much. And I wonder if some of this happened with CJ in the scouting process. They look at CJ's upbringing where his father went to prison when he's 13 years old. And they almost, in their mind, they've got like, oh, he's going to be this type of kid that's got emotional difficulties or troubles or anything. And what you do then is you close yourself off from those precious, rare diamonds that are the guys that took their circumstances and used it to become exceptional in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I think CJ is one of those people, you know, that He had really rough circumstances, and it's not just, you know, it's not just being from a single parent household or something. It's pretty extreme what he had to go through and the disruption in his life, and for him, he's one of those rare individuals that was able to use it as fuel to become exceptional.
Yeah,
and it's really cool, I think, because it's with CJ, the cool thing about it is, there's so many guys nowadays that are good at giving the interview about how their upbringing or their adversity shaped them, but you don't see it. You know, you see it on Instagram and you see it in the motivational videos, but you never know how much of it is for real. With CJ, the work that he did mentally last year as a quarterback and the way he was able to function at such a high level by the end of the season when it came to making adjustments to coverages, to diagnosing disguised coverages during a play, to go to not even his third read, but to go to guys that aren't even in the concept. You know, some of the stuff that he did with Dalton Schultz is next level stuff.
Yep.
You know, it's graduate level stuff. And you don't get that. You don't get that just by being naturally smart. You get that by just hours and hours and hours of thinking about it and watching it and talking to guys and everything. So that's where the proof is in the pudding in a lot of ways. He's wired different than almost every other young quarterback that's come down the pike since the passing era became what it is.
Yeah. Along those lines, hey, Ben, let's skip to Stroud 3 here. We'll get to word association in just a second because this actually plays well off of what Seth was just talking about. This is CJ's view on leadership.
Having a bad day is not acceptable for quarterback, and like having bad demeanor, because everybody's going to have a bad practice after that. You know, you're the leader. Everybody's always looking at you. You're the example. You're the foundation. You're the standard. Isn't just, you know, making plays and taking a hit. It's when nobody's looking, you know, picking up a towel in a locker room, treating everybody the right way, you know, just being a servant.
Yeah. See, somewhere Caleb Williams is like, see, CJ Stroud wants a clean locker room too, Bears teammates. All right. When I listened to that cut, Seth, the first thing I thought of was Ohio State. Because CJ talks about that a lot. Like, see, I think CJ is obviously wired a certain kind of way where he obviously deserves almost all the credit. But I think even CJ would say there's influences that he's had. And he talks about at Ohio State, Ryan Day, his position coaches, one in particular whose name I don't recall, but that's where he rounded out his quarterback leadership skills. He's said in interviews, and that's why sometimes when I see these captions on Get Up and First Take, like, is Ryan Day on the hot seat? I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, is Ryan Day on the hot seat? What the hell?
I wonder if this might be the interview he did last year and they just repackaged it and put out a new video, because it's all, I think this was the really good interview. Regardless though, he's talked about how, you know, it was Ryan Day that taught him that lesson. Your body language really matters when you're the leader.
Yeah.
That people are looking to you. You know, Ted Johnson always loved the analogy of when there's rough turbulence on a flight, look at the flight attendants. And if they're not freaking out, then, okay, this is probably no big deal. If the flight attendant's freaking out, then you start to get nervous. So likewise, you know, when you're the quarterback and people are looking into you, you got to project strength no matter what and confidence. And I think CJ has credited those coaches at Ohio State for really drilling that into him. And that was another one where he was in a competition at Ohio State. It's really, a lot of really good quarterbacks have transferred out of Ohio State through the years. Joe Burrow transferred out of Ohio State because it's competitive as hell. And he had to learn all those lessons in a hyper-competitive environment.
The video of this interview just went up 18 hours ago.
Right, so, that's what I'm saying, but I wonder if they repackaged like last year's
maybe
interview or something.
Yeah, maybe. He got there, and Justin Fields was there, and Quinn Ewers was there. And Quinn Ewers was the golden child.
Right, okay.
At Ohio State.
Quinn Ewers transferred in the year that... Who transferred in the year that CJ was slated to be the starter?
It might have been Quinn Ewers came early to Ohio State. Quinn Ewers graduated early from high school to get to Ohio State and then transferred out to Texas.
Right.
There might have been somebody else who transferred. I'm just taking it off of the article.
The other thing too about Harden is that Harden's actually had a pretty big influence on pass rushers. You know Leatu Leatu, the first round pick of the Colts?
I do.
He talked about when he kind of when he was injured and wasn't allowed to play and he reinvented himself. He was he watched James Harden film. And like the Euro step has become an NFL pass rush move over the last few years. And you know, Harden was not the only Euro stepper out there, but for a while he was like the most notable and the most complained about because people were he was so good at it.
Yeah.
That everybody was convinced that he was traveling. Credit James Harden, unless Leatu Leatu ends up being a menace to the Texans over the years.
Yeah.
And I blame him for everything. Yeah. The Euro story. Was he came in 2021.
21, yeah.
And that was when C.J. Stroud was slated to be the starter.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, Ewers shows up, like, in the summer and or in the offseason. And that was, like, one extra little chip on the shoulder, you know, like a motivational, oh, this guy's the chosen one, huh?
Yeah.
So, it was, like, constant ever-going competition there at Ohio State.
Yeah, he got there after CJ's redshirt year in 2020. That's right. So CJ played a little word association. I love word association. And CJ played, they named a bunch of his teammates as well as a few people he has great respect for. Here was a little word association with CJ Stroud. Let's take a listen.
I'm going to give you a name, and you give me the first thing that comes to mind.
Ben.
Tank Dell.
I would say inspirational.
Laramie Tunsil.
Big Smooth.
Nico Collins.
Strength.
DeMeco Ryans.
A humble beast.
Joe Mixon.
West Coast perseverance. That's three words. He's straight West Coast. Like, he reminds me of me, you know, like he loved being from the West Coast. He's from the Bay.
Dalton Schultz.
Unique butterfly. Let me explain. He has a cocoon. But once you get past that cocoon, he opens up and he blossoms.
Tom Brady.
He's the blueprint, who you would model your game after. You got to be yourself at the same way. So he'll tell you that. He wanted to, you know, be a great teammate, and that's something that I want to be as well.
Micah Parsons.
He's like a greedy lion. Like, he's no on and off switch. He's on 24/7. He has terrible takes. But also, man, he's a great friend of mine. You know, I have nothing but great things to say of him other than his takes.
Stephon Diggs.
Authentic. He doesn't care who's watching. He's going to be himself. I'm just really excited and grateful to have a teammate and another brother like him.
Okay. If I'm power ranking these, my three favorite, because he did about 10 of them there, my three favorite are DeMeco Ryans, humble beast, Dalton Schultz, unique butterfly. Because he got poetic yeah.
on that. Yeah. And then when he unfolds, he's something beautiful.
Very metaphorical. Like, he's in a cocoon, but then once the cocoon opens, it's this beautiful creature who's, you know, very outgoing.
Sounds like it sounded more like he was seducing him than complimenting him.
The article talks about the article's very cool that comes with this video on the boardroom. It talks about, like, Dalton is a big influence on CJ. Like, Dalton, like business advice and things like that. Like, Dalton is kind of a go-to for CJ, according to this article. So that's really cool. Greedy Lion, Micah Parsons, is my favorite one. He's got horrible taste, but I have nothing bad to say about him except for his taste. That was hilarious.
He has horrible takes, too.
Did he say takes or taste? Takes.
Takes.
He said takes. Oh, okay.
It's his takes that are horrible.
His takes are,
100% his takes that are horrible.
His takes are bad.
I feel like that's why the Cowboys... Nobody's... As much uproar... It's amazing to me. Like, as much uproar as there was over the C.D. Lamb situation... There's not a peep about Micah Parsons that I can see, really. I feel like people in Dallas must kind of be like, yeah, I get it. I don't know. Have you heard his takes? He's arguing that the NFC East is the best division in football based on preseason rankings from 2023.
Yeah.
That's one of the worst all-time takes ever. You can't be listened to after that.
He's so bad. You can't even argue with him. You know what I mean?
Right, like, right. Because he's going to throw stuff up. That's the kind of, that annoying social media thing that happens when you've thoroughly dismantled somebody and they just won't stop.
Yeah.
That's Micah Parsons.
That's what's so funny about him and CJ debating is, like, half the time CJ just throws his hands up. He's like, how am I supposed to debate this? The guy's using preseason rankings to rate how good the division was at the end of the year.
Like, with CJ, it turns into him looking at the other people in the room, like, just like, what am I crazy? What am I even arguing with here? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone texts in, the Harden trade still paying off in first-round picks, starting with the contract. Yeah, Harden's paying off in multiple ways. Reed Sheppard would not be a Rocket were it not for the Houston, for the James Harden trade. Reed Sheppard, favorite for the NBA Rookie of the Year now, by the way. Favorite for the NBA Rookie of the Year. That's very interesting.
This is going to be, this is bubbling up underneath the surface, the potential bomb that the Rockets might become in a good way. Bad bomb.
No.
Good bomb.
No, good bomb.
Oh, I was workshopping nicknames for Tommy Townsend, the punter, last night.
Oh, what'd you come up with?
Well, you know what I said? Because I don't like Tommy Rockets. That sounds fun and everything. But with a rocket, you think more like a Stinger missile or something, where there's a trajectory that's kind of straight.
Okay.
You know, where he's more of a medieval archer, because it's this hang time that's notable.
Okay.
He's got a really nice hang time. So what some people suggested was Tommy Trebuchet. The Trebuchet was like that old medieval catapult, which has a ring to it. Tommy Trebuchet, but I feel like it goes into the Sean Pendergast brand of elitism a little bit. Not everybody's going to know Tommy Trebuchet right
Sean
off the
Pendergast
bat.
Sean Pendergast doesn't know what Trebuchet is. Yeah,
whatever. Now you're just trying to play the everyman. Now I didn't know what it was either. I looked at it. People suggested it to me, and I looked it up, and I was like, oh yeah, that is kind of badass. Like he's lobbing a flaming hot ball of tar up into the opposition's ring, up into the enemy castle.
That's how you prove you're blue collar. You don't know what trebuchet means. I like Tommy Rockets has a mob vibe to it. You know what I mean? Like,
well, Tommy Time Bomb.
Okay.
Somebody thought maybe that, because it's hang time,
yeah,
and it's like lobbing a bomb up into the opposition.
I think anytime you got to spend more than 5 seconds explaining a nickname, it's not a good nickname. You know what I mean?
Did I have to explain Time Bomb?
Yeah, well, no, but you had to explain the thought behind why it makes a good nickname, like because the time is the hang time and the bomb is the bomb.
If I said something like it doesn't work for the nickname, but like if I called it a moonshot, you would know what that is, right?
I would, yeah. That's a better nickname.
It just doesn't ring the same way Tommy Time Bomb does.
Then don't use either of them. Stick with Trebuchet. I mean, Trebuchet sucks. I'm a blue collar guy. What am I talking
Problem
about?
Problem with here? Time Bomb is it more like you immediately think the guy's got a temper issue or something.
And he doesn't.
You know? He's a guy that's been to anger management, and it's like you can see him counting to 10 in his head, but yeah.
He's the nicest guy. We had him on the postgame show on Saturday. We had Tommy Townsend. Clint and I had Tommy Townsend on because they didn't want to give us anybody who might get cut. And those are the only guys that played in the game. So we're like, all right, the guys who won't get cut, Weeks, Townsend, Fairbairn, they all played in the game.
Yeah.
Give us Townsend. Well, we tried Weeks, but it was Weeks' daughter's birthday. So then we went with Townsend. Townsend was cool, man. He's a good guy.
Some suggestions. Tommy Trajectory from the text line. I like that.
You do?
Tommy Trajectory. Tommy Parabola. It's in the Sean Pendergast brand of elitism.
Stop it. Because it's geometry.
What's the eccentricity on that parabola? Yeah. Hang Time Tommy. Ooh.
Okay. That one I kind of like.
See, I like Hang Time Tommy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It almost sounds a little bit like Hangman, you know? So
yeah.
It's got a little bit of a menacing factor.
Yeah,
to it.
No, it's set up for a good heel turn someday. When he turns into an a-hole, we can just call him Hangman Tommy.
Somebody says don't get started on Moonshot because Lopez will come in and mansplain what Moonshot actually means and how it's used incorrectly.
Oh, okay, we got to save
right.
this for the toss.
Moonshot must mean, I think it means when you'd like, because you have to hit the anything, and like when you're dealing with any kind of orbiting body or whatever, you got to meet it at precisely the right moment.
Okay.
I'm guessing that's what moonshot actually
Tommy
means.
Tommy Javelin. So. Tommy Two Shoes.
Ooh, Tommy Javelin.
Yeah.
Downtown Townsend.
Not bad. Bomby Tommy.
Tommy Tommy.
Yeah, not bad.
I like Tommy Mortar now.
Tommy Mortar's good. I don't think, had you read that one?
I don't know. Well, we had talked about it before that I did think it was more like a mortar shot.
Yeah.
You know, you think about that little mortar pipe that they use, they stick it in. It's always at a pretty, you know, it's almost like it's a greater than 45 degree angle when they put it in there. Yeah.
Tommy Hang.
You're lobbing a mortar.
Yeah, man. Tommy Hang Times. That's not bad. Tommy Thunderleg.
Tommy
I like that. I like that. All right, keep them coming. I'd air Tommy. Look at this, man. People are into this.
I was bragging about Tommy Townsend's hang time last night, and somebody said, oh, come on. He's not better than Cam, because otherwise the Chiefs never would have let him go. And I'm like, yeah, Tyreek Hill sure does suck. So, look.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, you know what? Okay, well, then we can use the same logic for the Texans letting Cam Johnston go.
Right.
The Chiefs were still, they had a bit of a punter battle there between Matt, what's his face there?
Oh, Breeza, the punt god. Yeah.
Breeza, yeah. So it's not, sometimes it just comes with specialists. You know, one thing last year was the Texans barely punted at all.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is that, like, how much do you want to spend on a punter that might not punt all that much?
Right.
It's if the Texans could have just figured out the red zone last year, they could have set some records.
Big
but
time.
In terms of just moving the ball down the field, they were nails.
Really good at it.
Can I say the one that starts with P? It's the third one down right now.
Yeah, boy, that's the, you know who I heard use that first was JT O'Sullivan talking about passes here.
He says Tommy P missiles.
Yeah.
Except it's a different version of
it's a synonym for urinating. Yeah.
Yeah. So Tommy Pitt missiles.
Yeah. Tommy Hang Bomb, Tommy Tomahawk, Tommy
Thunderbombs.
Tommy Tomahawk. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Isn't his name Reed? Well, he goes by Tommy on the depth chart. His given name might be Reed, but I don't understand exactly.
We're not going
what
government names
about.
Here, okay?
CJ, wait a second. His name's not CJ Stroud.
His name is Coleridge, okay?
Yes. Why are we saying CJ all the time when his name is Coleridge?
Coleridge is kind of a cool name, too, by the way. Like, that's kind of a badass name. All right, 53-man roster. Let's rapid fire these here real quick. One thought for each position, Seth. One thought, we'll rapid fire these because we probably got people getting in their cars, haven't heard our thoughts yet on what the Texans did for the 53 here. Quarterback, my thought is this might be it for Case Keenum. Foot injury knocks him out for the year. I hope it's not it for Case Keenum. I hope that there's more football to be played. But if it is, this is about as good a coaching apprenticeship as you can get for Case. Being in the building all year, don't have to focus on playing, focus on mentoring C.J. Stroud.
You know what's funny is that Cliff Kingsbury, man that's also loosely connected, connected to Case Keenum, when he was a young player who wasn't making it as a quarterback for the Patriots, and they put him on IR, second, third year in the league, and he basically used that like a coaching internship.
He did.
And ended up going to coaches' meetings and everything. So, you know, likewise, at the other end of the spectrum, Case, who's been in the league forever and has learned a lot and has that vibe about him that you could totally see him being a coach. Yeah, this might be a good little... I would not be surprised at all if we end up hearing about Case Keenum being in the game plan meetings and things like that this year.
Running back... The Akers hand-wringing was for nothing. He's on the team. I'm okay with Damian Pierce being on the team for now, as long as Cam Akers is on the team. For now, it would appear Damian Pierce, unless they think that there's still the old Damian's in there, worst case is he's keeping a roster spot from, like, Allie Gay or somebody at the back end of the roster.
Well, that's the thing. I think they do think that the old Damian Pierce is in there. It's just how long do you play it out? Like, how much patience do you have with it? Where you and I were going to be really upset is if Cam Akers was gone and they were definitely looking at Damian Pierce as the full-time backup running back.
Yep.
Because I think with Ogunbowale, he's more of a special teamer. With British Brooks, I think they look at him as a fullback, at least partly. That last preseason game was clearly an audition for him to see what he could do as a fullback. Because... Sean, I went back and watched all the plays where he was lined up as a tight end or a fullback or an H-back, and every time he had a good block, including on the one really good play where he destroyed a defensive lineman, it was a run for no gain, but British Brooks is celebrating like they just scored the game. He was looking towards the sideline. I want to find out the story on this. After a lot of his good blocks, he was looking and yelling at somebody on the sideline. I'm going to credit, without knowing if it actually happened, it looked a lot like either a coach or a player had told him before the game, look, we're going to use you differently, and this is your chance to make the team. We want to see what you can do as a lead blocker. And every time he did it, man, like, this is why I get so excited for these final preseason games now. They're becoming my favorite preseason games or, like, episodes. Because you see the guys that are out there just fighting their butts off.
Yeah.
and British Brooks in a very competitive running backs room with the younger guys. J.J. Taylor and Jawar Jordan both could have made this team, I think, as guys with upside. He did the one thing that those guys can't do, or any fullback in recent memory, going back to Vontae Leach. He just laid the hammer down on people much larger than him. It was really fun to watch, going back and watching him as a blocker. There's something there, man. And as a pass blocker, too. He did good work as a pass blocker.
Yeah.
So I'm perhaps irrationally optimistic about him as a fullback slash tailback.
We'll hear from Caserio in about 90 minutes. He's doing a press conference today with the media at 9 o'clock. I hope somebody asks him about that. Like, what's your vision for British Brooks' role on this team as the team's currently constructed?
Yeah, and was he a guy that was going in uncertain of a roster spot in that final preseason
game? Yeah. Did he win that spot?
I think he played his way into that. I think if he'd gone out and whiffed, if he'd played fullback the way, frankly, I'll just be honest here. I'm not trying to insult the guy. Torrey Harrison he was a mess in that game. It wasn't when he wasn't holding, he was whiffing on blocks. Like, if he had played like that, I don't think British Brooks is on the team.
I agree.
I think Jawar Jordan or Tommy or J.J. Taylor might be. But
maybe.
Yeah, I think those two guys just physically can't do the same things that British Brooks can as a blocker.
We should mention Jawar Jordan did go to IR. So he got waived.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He got waived with an injured designation, which means when he makes it through waivers, nobody's picking him up. He'll come back here and be on IR. Just the audio. We hadn't mentioned that yet. Jawar Jordan, if people are wondering, why didn't he make the team? Injured. Tight end, Teagan Catoriano, man. We barely knew ye. Even though you were here for 3 training camps and 2 seasons. But we will always have your 3 catches for 83 yards in the Stroud Bowl back in Week 18 of 2022. The game where they beat the Colts, and everybody was mad they beat the Colts. Teagan Catoriano was a big reason they beat the Colts that day. He had 3 catches for 83 yards.
He's one of the real unsung heroes in that effort.
Yeah.
I don't think we credit that nameless, faceless defensive back that missed the easy
interception. Rashawn McCloud, I remember his name and his face.
Remember him!
Yeah. He should get a statue. There should be a statue outside of NRG with a ball going through Rashawn McCloud's hands.
like the Jordan silhouette, except him with the ball going through his hands.
In between his... I mean, think about that, dude. Think about that. If that ball is an inch to the left or an inch to the right, Bryce Young might be the Texans quarterback.
Look, no, this isn't even me being a Texans apologist or anything. I think there's a really good chance that the Texans would have drafted C.J. Stroud anyway. When you look at some of the anonymous GMs and GM polls and everything from back before the draft, it wasn't unanimous on Bryce Young.
No.
And I think the very real thing is, I think there are a lot of people that might have had a really good grade on Bryce Young, but when they met him in person or saw him at his pro day in person, probably got freaked the hell out about how tiny he is.
Yeah. So, what's up, guys? But, how are we doing? Everyone good?
Yeah, maybe they would have, maybe they wouldn't have. I think the Panthers were fools for the analytics and the S2 cognition BS and all that. So it worked out the way it needed to work out.
It did. As someone said, Quentin Tarantino, we barely knew ye. His name does sound a lot like Quentin Tarantino.
That's what I said, because I often, believe it or not, Sean, I often mess up Teagan Catoriano's name and say Quentin Tarantino.
I'm not buying that.
But if I were Quentin Tarantino, I would not have cast myself in the role of 4th tight end on this team. If you're trying to make this team, the D'Amico loves Brevin Jordan.
Yeah.
I think they love his versatility.
He's not
a classic tight end, but they've got a pretty good mix if Cade Stover develops as a blocker.
He's
not there. I see the potential for it, but he's still very raw as a blocker. He's only played the position for 2 years, but this was the wrong year to be Teagan Catoriano.
My O-line thought, one thought for each position group. My O-line thought, I don't think they're done here. I think there could be pickups off of waivers. I think there could be a trade coming. And I'll point to the actual guys who could get replaced, Kendrick Green and Nick Broeker. Kendrick Green was a trade during training camp last year. Nick Broeker was picked up off of waivers from the Bills, I think, during the season. So if there's an area of this roster that could churn, I think it's like O-lineman 8 and 9 right there with the waiver wire.
Right, and I think with I'm torn on Kendrick Green because I love his story too. It's kind of like British Brooks. Look, Kendrick Green was drafted to be the center for the Steelers. He started his rookie year. And it was really bad and ugly. I went back when the Texans first signed Kendrick Green. I went back and I sought out just his. I was like, all right, you know, I don't love PFF grades, but let's go and look in the games where he was highest graded. And I watched a couple of his games where he had his highest grades of the season, and they were some of the worst performances I've seen out of a starting center. They were really, really bad. So when the Texans signed him, I was incredibly skeptical. And then when I found out they were going to play him at guard, I thought, well, this is going to be a disaster. He came in and he played his ass off. Like, he's undersized. He's got little tiny T-Rex arms, but he plays his ass off. And he's as scrappy as you need to be when you're an undersized guard. But ultimately, I don't know how well that weathers over time. So he's going to constantly have to be fighting to prove his spot on the team. But I'm pulling for him. I love the fact that just to paint the picture a little bit longer for people that don't know the story. So that was in 2021 when he started for the center at the Steelers. In 2022, he didn't play at all. And in training camp that year, they tried him as a fullback, not a gadget fullback. They tried to see if he could play fullback, because they thought that was the only way he could make it, and it didn't work out. So it's been a long story. Road back for Kendrick Green.
Yep, it's a really good story. Going over to the defensive side of the ball, D-line, my initial thought in looking at the 53, Seth, is that this gets very interesting when Denico Autry comes back from his suspension and Kurt Heinisch comes back from his stint on short-term IR.
Yeah.
They only have 8 defensive linemen, so they could always carry both guys and make one or two of them inactive on game day. But I look at the 8 they have. I'm like, this is a good group, man. This is a good group of defensive linemen, and there's reinforcements on the way potentially.
Well, and I think it's some of the guys that are the veteran players, like Derek Barnett and Jerry Hughes especially.
Yeah.
If Jerry Hughes wasn't there, you know, I think one of those guys probably makes the team right now. Knowing that you've got two other defensive linemen, or that you've got Denico Autry coming back and Kurt Heinisch coming back at some point, that's when the rubber will meet the road when it comes to some of these other bloated position groups. You can carry, you're a little light on defensive linemen right now, but you can carry 7 wide receivers and 5 running backs because of that. When you start to bring other people back in and Christian Harris comes back, fingers crossed, after week 4, then that's when the Damian Pierce experiment might be very much tied to the return of Christian Harris in some regards.
Yeah, that's the part of the roster where the jostling's going on. Linebacker, one thought, oh bleep, Christian Harris. That's it. That's the thought. This injury is obviously more serious than maybe even Christian Harris himself had figured. I mean, because he made it back to practice at one point and then immediately went back to getting treatment on this injury for the rest of camp.
The one that I was a little bit surprised about was Jamal Hill and Delshawn Phillips both making the team. Delshawn Phillips is a really good special teams player. He's a veteran player, but he didn't play a whole lot of linebacker in Baltimore and previously in his career. But he's very athletic, very athletic. Jamal Hill, very athletic, but also very raw. So I think they really like the athleticism of those guys, and they like the upside of Jamal Hill. If you look at linebacker right now, for everybody except Azeez Alshire, it's going to be by committee, I think.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be times when they're going to want Henry Toa to play the will. There's going to be times where they want Jake Hansen to play the will. Neville Hewitt in there as a Sam. Just depending on whether they need to stop the run, whether they're more worried about the pass, I think it's going to be Azeez Alshire and a rotating cast of complimentary pieces.
Cornerback, my one thought is Jeff Okuda made the team, and it must be nice to have traits. You know what I mean? It must be nice because he hasn't practiced in forever. That was enough to get Andrew Beck and Noah Brown cut, but Jeff Okuda made the team.
Okuda, though, too. So Okuda and Henderson kind of flip-flopped roles because Okuda was healthy at the beginning of training camp.
Yeah.
And I thought in the OTAs, it seemed like Okuda was better than Henderson. And then Henderson comes along and just didn't do anything to avail himself. So if you just look at it, okay, who's the better player right now? And in recent memory, too, they weren't displeased with Okuda in Atlanta. So it makes sense as long as you can stay healthy.
Yeah, I think corner's another position where they're looking at the waiver wire today.
The other thing, too, people pointed out, when you start to play the numbers games about the cornerback and linebackers right now, Jalen Petrie's kind of a hybrid safety slash linebacker, so he gives you a little bit of flexibility.
That's what I, when I did my 53 earlier this week, I had almost the exact group that, that the Texans did. The numbers were the same. It was five safeties, five corners, but it's really like five and a half corners and four and a half safeties because of Petrie. He kind of split them up. The last one, safety, my one thought, should they have gone after Justin Simmons? And I don't know what the answer is, but that's, you know, I'm fine with this safety group, I guess.
I'm fine with, you know, Eric Murray. I'm starting to get to the point where I might need to do a deep dive on Eric Murray, because I do think that we are all just still a little bit, we still feel a little jilted because that was one of Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby's weird moves. Yeah. They paid Eric Murray like he was a starting cornerback in the league when they brought him in as a free agent. And that was in a year where the Texans' defense had 100% completely collapsed against the Chiefs in the playoffs. However many unanswered scores they allowed in that game, or straight scores by the Chiefs' offense in that game. In the offseason, to address it, they let go of DJ Reader and brought in Eric Murray.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us are just still too emotionally tied to that part of it. Whereas Caserio came in and, like, with no tie to that previous transaction, he re-upped Eric Murray. They like his versatility.
Yeah.
They're using him more the way that Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby should have realized he should be.
Yeah,
used.
And paying him what he should be paid.
Right.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you here. Nick Caserio meets with the media today at 9 o'clock. We're going to carry that for you live here on Sports Radio 610. 100 NFL players ranked the quarterbacks in the league in several categories. The most overrated is a fun category, and C.J. Stroud showed up in one particular group. I'm kind of proud of him for this. We'll tell you which one it is. That's coming up next.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.